The Law of Attraction Talk Radio is changing the world through science and spirituality. Join Jules as she brings you powerful and provocative guests designed to expand your well-being, power, and happiness. There is nothing more important than you creating your reality from a higher emotional place. Take charge of your thoughts, choose to be happy, and create your better life today. Law of Attraction Talk Radio with Jules.
Well, welcome to Law of Attraction Talk Radio. I'm Jules from beautiful, sunny, and glorious Southern California. Oh, have I got such a great show planned out for you tonight. We have two phenomenal guests with us. I'm sure you have seen and heard of them both. First, we have Real Horse Whisperer himself, Mr. Buck Brannaman, with us. For those of you who may not be familiar with his name, he is the person that Robert Redford portrayed in the movie Horse Whisperer. A brand new wonderful documentary has just been made on this cowboy as he teaches us how to communicate with horses as well as to communicate with other humans. He is so fabulous, and you can feel his gentleness right over the airwaves. We also have animal communicator Lydia Hibby, who has been seen on 48 Hours, David Letterman, Jay Leno, and many, many others. So tonight it's all about animals and how they are here to teach us something spectacular about ourselves and the way we communicate. They are truly mirrors of our souls, which brings us closer to the understanding of the Law of Attraction. So stay tuned for a great show right here on Law of Attraction Talk Radio.
You are listening to your daily dose of well-being and inspiration on Law of Attraction Radio Network at LOARadionetwork.com. Hear this incredible show on your smartphone through Stitcher.com, which goes through your car stereos with Ford Sync or any auto dashboard that has the internet. Listen to our 24/7 broadcast with our mobile app as well, or just listen through an MP3 player or computer. Remember, LOARadionetwork.com, heard in over 120 countries. Is the radio station for your well-being.
Ah, looking out on that tropical night, having a romantic conversation with your possible soulmate, or hitting one of the 7 nightclubs on the ship to dance the night away, then sitting back and listening to fantastic workshops that help you to nurture that relationship into something you've never experienced before. You may think it's just a dream, but it can be a reality on our Spiritual Singles Cruise, October 27th to October 31st. We made a last-minute cabin buy so that we could extend the original group rates, which still start off at $599. So don't delay. Sign up now and start manifesting the love you have been waiting for. Go to LOARadionetwork.com. Oh boy, we are expanding, aren't we? We are learning more about ourselves as we get deeper into the understanding of how this universal law of attraction really works. I am loving this time that we're in. Every day, a new insight pops up. And, well, have you noticed how fast things are manifesting? It's really incredible. So try this. Set your intention today by writing it down. Then, feel as if it's already happened. Now, if this is too hard to do, then write it out and ask your angels or God or Source to obtain your desire for you, or at the very least, send you the opportunities to accomplish what it is that you want. Now, you can ask to win the lottery, and if that doesn't happen, well, that just means that your belief system is not quite in sync with your desires or your beliefs right now. You may want to ask for something that you believe is doable. For example, ask for 3 more clients for your business, or ask for an additional $1,000 per month, or ask to quit smoking, or ask that you find a brand new wonderful friend. Just set out the intention in order to prove to yourself just how powerful you really are. Then watch how fast the universe responds. It's amazing, and I want to hear your results, so send me an email to jules@loaradionetwork.com. I really want to hear your fabulous manifesting story. I also want to mention that we have 3 brand new shows on Law of Attraction Radio Network. Jungle Magic with Joe Knapp is coming to us from Brazil. Joe has some new information he's discovered on the Law of Attraction, so check it out. We also have a new show called Wealth Volcano with Brian Petter. He's really going to help you manifest a brand new way of living with wealth. And then we have the Vibrant Living Show with Samir Vegel. Samir credits Abraham for helping him transform his way of thinking to one of realization of his inner power. They're all wonderful shows, and I urge you to listen to them. You know, Law of Attraction Radio Network really is the source for your well-being. Just keep tuning in and laugh with us, love with us, and transform with us. Now let's get on with tonight's show. First, we're going to interview Cowboy Buck Brenneman about his new fantastic documentary that was just released this week. Now let me tell you, there is a definite reason why this film has won so many awards, especially the coveted Audience Award at the Sundance Film Festival this year. If you want to see a list of all the theaters that you can go see this movie, go to buckthefilm.com. They have all of the locations of where it's playing. And I urge all of you to see this because I personally believe in Buck's message that your animal's behavior is a direct reflection of you. When you can develop the empathy to feel what that animal feels, you can see down deep into your own soul. Your horse, beloved pet, or even wild animals that visit you are sometimes there to be your biggest teacher. Buck Brenneman grew up to be a lasso roper. His alcoholic father beat him and his younger brother unmercifully, which grew even more horrendous when his mother died at an early age. Thank goodness the Children Protective Services system finally worked, and they went to live with a foster family in which they could develop their natural talents without ridicule or fear of being beaten. Buck discovered that he understood how it felt for a horse to be beaten into submission in order to be broken. It was this empathy that led Buck on a lifelong mission of being that horse whisperer or that excellent, one-of-a-kind horseman. He was treating the horse with respect, love, and gaining the trust of the animal in which Buck could lead it. There are so many powerful insights this cowboy has, and it is with great honor that I welcome Buck Brenneman to Law of Attraction Talk Radio.
Well, thank you. Thanks for having me.
Buck, your documentary has won so many awards, and the audience is loving the message. Tell me, how did it all start?
Well, the reason why Cindy Meal did this documentary is that she had been to some of my clinics over the years, and she realized what some of the lessons that you learn through working with the horses, what profound changes it makes upon the person and just the way they live their life, the way they approach a lot of other things in life. And we were having lunch one day, and she said, "I so wish people could see this and get the message to this, that in a mainstream kind of a way, that weren't necessarily all horse people or livestock people, because there's some great life lessons to be learned through this." And she wanted to share that with everybody else. So that's where she said, "Well, gee, I'd like to do a documentary." And, well, I guess she just caught me on the right day, because I just said, "Well, go ahead and do it. I guess we're done talking about it. You might as well get after it." And, of course, about the time I said that, she looked across the table at me like she had just swallowed a fly. Because then she knew she had to do it. So, but she worked on it for about 2.5 years, and gee, she did a good job. And I realized after it was all over what a risk I was probably taking, allowing someone to do this, but turned out to be a good risk, and I'm real proud of her.
Now let's go back to the beginning, where you and your brother were physically abused by your alcoholic father, especially after your mother died.
Right.
And after that, you went into a really great foster home. Is this where you develop your empathy to relate to a horse?
Well, I certainly had an empathy for him. And, you know, it was years of education and studying with great horsemen that really brought me along the way. You know, I always loved the horses. And when I went to live with my foster parents, the horses were really my refuge. And that's sort of where I went to hide. And frankly, probably the first few years, I probably didn't offer them very much because I just didn't know a whole lot, but they sure offered me a lot, and there was a time when they were my only friends I had in the whole world. So I guess now what I'm doing is spending the rest of my life paying them back for what they did for me early on.
So out of your sensitivity, you were able to learn how to communicate effectively with the horses. Is this something that anybody can do?
Well, you know, really and truly, this is there for anybody. It would be, I guess it would be sad if it was only there for me. But but I've studied this and devoted my life to it and worked very hard at it. And that's really the essence of my clinics. You know, sometimes people will see me work with a horse and they'll say, well, now, what's the owner going to do when she gets a hold of it? And my answer is, if she can learn to do what I do, she'll get what I get. So I have years and years of experience under my belt, and it's all I've worked at. It's my passion. It's my life. But it is there for anybody that wants it.
So is your communication style just with horses, or is it with other animals?
Well, you know, it would be pretty presumptuous of me to spend much time talking about training dolphins or something. But because really, I mean, I've devoted my life to horses. But I do think that people that I've been around that were kind of handy at working with other types of animals, whether it's stock dogs or elephants or whatever it might be, we seem to have a common thread in the way we approach things philosophically. And so I know there is a kinship among people that do kind of get along with other animals and can get something done with a lot of fuss, without a lot of fuss and without a lot of trouble.
Okay, then, let's get back to the horses. You state that the horse is actually a mirror or a direct reflection of our communication skills. Is that because they read our energy?
Oh, absolutely. I mean, there's nothing mystical about it. It's that they're very keen. They're very, very perceptive, because if you figure through the thousands of years that a horse has been around, their only means of surviving was to be very aware, keenly aware of things that might be a threat to them, and to make the right decision to flee before they lose their life. You know, that's just how they've evolved. And so because of that, they tend to be a little suspicious. They tend to be real keen about seeing things and being aware of things. And so you might have a horse that you've not worked with very much, and he's not really that comfortable being around human beings yet. You can't blame him for being kind of suspicious and thinking that you might mean him harm. So that's kind of where you start the whole process, is trying to get him sure of you to where he'd really rather be with you than away from you. And it takes a while, but you just have to understand where the horse is coming from, that he's not doing anything wrong. He's just trying to survive.
Then the reason why you are so effective with horses is because you are communicating this trust. You're building on this trust between you and the horse.
Sure, absolutely. Because you think about, I've heard a lot of horse people say this over the years. They'd say, well, I got him doing this or that today, and then it seems like tomorrow I know I'm going to be starting over. He'll act like he doesn't remember anything from the day before. And they'll sort of be even a little bit frustrated with the horse. And I'll say, well, you know, the horse isn't any different than a human in this respect, that if when you're asking him to do something, he's under a lot of stress, he's troubled, it's not going to carry over from one day to the next, or 1 week to the next, or 1 month to the next. The only time that horse is going to remember something and build on it is if you can eliminate what he feels is a threat. If he feels comfortable with you, well, then it's going to carry over from one day to the next. So it's so important that you get him sure of you. And there's no crime in asking a horse to do a day's work. But he shouldn't be doing it as a slave to you. He should be doing it as your partner. It's like a dance. And whether you're out on a ranch working cows or you're on a trail ride in Central Park, it really doesn't make any difference. The horse should be your dance partner. And he can respond to you and do what you'd ask him to do, but he doesn't have to be troubled to do it.
So your philosophy in building trust with the horse is actually the same philosophy that we should be using in our communication skills and our relationship skills with others.
Well, sure. You know, there's so many times that in my clinics that I'll draw an analogy between working with young horses and raising your kids. It's not so different. You know, 75 years ago, 50 years ago, maybe less, it seemed like the old conventional wisdom was is just wait till the kid does something really wrong and then pull out the belt and beat on him for it, and that eventually he'll put two and two together. Well, usually the kid only ends up afraid of his parent. That's about all it amounts to. Or maybe he gets a little bit more sneaky about doing what he did wrong. But the idea in working with a young horse is when you see things shaping up, you plan ahead. You see things kind of heading the wrong direction. Well, you redirect them. You change their mind. You get them thinking about something else. You make the wrong thing difficult. You make the right thing easy. But you don't make the wrong thing impossible. They have to learn from their mistakes. So you make it difficult for them to make a mistake, but you don't make it unbearable.
So discipline is not a dirty word.
Well, you know, no, it's, I don't know if that word almost makes me a little bit uncomfortable, but I'm okay with discipline so long as it starts with the human. Because the human a lot of times is undisciplined, they're inconsistent, they're not attached, they're sort of, you know, they're in and out. You know, people will sometimes ask me, they'll say, well, I've read in a certain horse magazine that a horse has a 15-minute attention span. And I'll say, wrong. Typically, the human might be lucky to have a 15-minute attention span, and most of the time, it's 2 or 3 minutes. And then about the time the human has what I refer to as a cranial anal inversion, then the horse loses track because the human lost track. But there's nothing in the horse's nature that would cause him to be inattentive. And I often tell people, just because he's not paying attention to you doesn't mean he's not paying attention. But you might have kind of gotten to the point where you're not very doggone interesting.
So sometimes horses or animals just get bored of us.
Yeah, and sometimes it's not bored. Sometimes they just tune you out. I mean, we all have friends that we might love them to death, but they may have a little bit of a motor mouth, and maybe they do a lot of talking without engaging their brain, and eventually it kind of becomes white noise. You know, you just kind of shut them out because you think, you know, if I'm going to wait around for him or her to say something really profound, I could be here quite a while. So you eventually just tune them out. Well, a lot of times that's what horses are. That's what they do. They don't like being nagged any more than a person does. And if a person is just nagging and picking at them and they never seem to be able to do anything right to please you, eventually they just tune you out and ignore you.
Tell us in your words how being a horseman or a horse whisperer has impacted your life, especially with being a parent.
Well, of course, for years, even before I had kids, you know, I would always, you know, you try to relate to people in a way that they understand you. And of course, I'm always drawing analogies between human relationships and relationships with a parent and a child, so that they can kind of put themselves in the same frame of mind that I'm in. And I suppose for years I thought in the back of my mind, boy, you better hope this works out when you have kids of your own. And, well, sure enough, it did. I mean, you've seen my daughter on that documentary. And,
uh-huh.
she is just the best, I'll tell you. She's the coolest kid. And of course, a lot of credit, you know, is due to my wife, Mary. She's had such a huge role in raising the kids. But we've both been on the same page with them, and sort of we approach things kind of the same way.
So you said that you shouldn't be a friend to your child. You should be the parent, and you should lead. Does that still hold true?
Well, sort of. The notion to that is you know how some people, they say, I just want to be my child's best friend. Mm-hmm. Well, some days that's great, and you can be. But some days you have to be the parent, and you have to maybe say or do what's a little unpopular with the kid, because you're there to protect him and guide him and take care of him, and you're supposed to be the one with good judgment. So some days you have to be the parent, and you can't worry about being their best friend. You have to take care of them and protect them. So you got to not be afraid of once in a while just saying, you know what, no, and the conversation is over. And a lot of times people worry so much about being the best friend that they're not being responsible as a parent. You know, I look at it like this, whether it's horses or kids. Frankly, cutting through all of the BS, frankly, on a bad day, it's probably a dictatorship. And on a good day, it's an enlightened monarchy.
Your friend and mentor, Tom Durrance, said you can learn anything using these three words: observe, remember, and compare. What does this mean?
Well, if you think about it, you put some thought into that, and I've sort of added one word to that: observe, remember, and compare, and adjust. Ray Hunt used to tell me, adjust to fit the situation. Just because you think you know something about horses, that might give you a starting place, but you have to be able to adjust when the situation changes, because horses will be, they're all unique too in their personality and the way they respond to you. So your experience gives you a starting place, and by the time you're done, you know where you should have really started. It's like the old saying goes, the thing you learn last is what you probably should have known first.
That is so true. You know, I have one final question for you, because I know that you have to run. But you see in the documentary that people are getting very, very emotional when they realize that the horse is reflecting their own personality.
Yeah.
Could you give us a story on something that recently happened on this?
Well, you know, once in a while, and I'd say actually some years it's often, that I might meet some, I met just a couple of months ago a lady in a clinic, and I actually, she'd been sort of struggling with this horse, and it was really kind of taking advantage of her, and it had just zero respect for her. And she was just a doormat for this horse. And I shut off my microphone. I went up to her and I said, you know, I'm not trying to hurt your feelings, but I got a pretty good idea that in your family, you're the peacemaker and you may try to make everything right. Even at the cost of your own happiness, you're trying to make everything right for everybody else. And your kids and husband, they let you take care of them and do all these things for them, but they don't respect you. And you're a doormat in your own home. And she started crying, of course. And I said, I'm not trying to judge you. I'm trying to help you. I said, if you can find a way for this horse to respect you and show you that you have every right to be here, it's going to change your life. And I said, Rome wasn't built in a day, but I'll get you a start. And I said, but we probably need to get you good at this with your horse before you kind of change the rules at home, but this is going to change you as a person if you get this figured out. And, you know, that kind of thing happens all the time. And without the horse, that sort of connection with a person is never really going to happen. The horse is such a great tool for us to discover things about ourselves.
So how did she get the respect of the horse?
Well, a lot of it is you start out with some real basic things on the end of a lead rope, being able to cause the horse to move, be able to first cause him to move, and then cause him to move accurately, where you determine where his feet go. you learn a lot about being in the right position, being able to motivate the horse to move his feet, and then reward him when he does. And first thing you know, she realized that instead of the horse controlling her and making her move all over the arena, that she could cause the horse to move all over the arena, and that it wasn't too long that she realized that she was the one that was supposed to lead the dance rather than be the one that followed. And it just sort of builds from there. First thing you know, then you're able to get that done from the back of the horse.
Wow, what powerful insight. And what powerful tools these animals are to us, because they truly do become our teachers in showing us how to communicate. This is brilliant. Thank you so much. Buck, your film is now being showed in Los Angeles and New York, right?
Yeah, just opened in New York and L.A. I was in L.A., well, this time yesterday, and so I was there for the opening in L.A., and Cindy Meal was here at all the openings in New York, and now I'm in town today for about another 8 hours, because I'm doing the Letterman show tonight. So.
Well, that ought to be fun, being on David Letterman. I want to strongly urge everyone to go see this wonderful new film called Buck. And if you would like to find a theater near you so that you could watch it, just go to buckthefilm.com, and they have all the locations right there. Buck, it has been an absolute delight having you on the show today. I wish you every success in the world, and when people go and see this, they will understand fully why Buck has received so many awards. It's really, really worth it. Have a great time on Letterman's show tonight. Thanks, Buck.
Okay, thank you.
And don't go away. We're going to be right back with animal communicator Lydia Hibby. You're going to love this. Ah, looking out on that tropical night, having a romantic conversation with your possible soulmate, or hitting one of the 7 nightclubs on the ship to dance the night away, then sitting back and listening to fantastic workshops that help you to nurture that relationship into something you've never experienced before. You may think it's just a dream, but it can be a reality on our Spiritual Singles Cruise, October 27th to October 31st. We made a last-minute cabin buy so that we could extend the original group rates, which still start off at $5.99. So don't delay. Sign up now and start manifesting the love you have been waiting for. Go to loaradionetwork.com.
You are listening to your daily dose of well-being and inspiration on Law of Attraction Radio Network at loaradionetwork.com. Hear this incredible show on your smartphone through Stitcher.com, which goes through your car stereos with Ford Sync or any auto dashboard that has the internet. Listen to our 24/7 broadcast with our mobile app as well, or just listen through an MP3 player or computer. Remember, loaradionetwork.com, heard in over 120 countries, is the radio station for your well-being.
I invited the most sought-after animal communicator, Lydia Hibby. I wanted to go into this subject further to explore why animals are sometimes our best teachers. Lydia is known for her many developed talents in communicating with horses, dogs, cats, dolphins, literally all animals. Her specialty, though, because of her veterinary office training, is to help the vet or owner determine the cause of an animal's illness. And if you have a lost animal or in need of talking to your deceased pet, Lydia can direct you to the right people right from her website, which is lydiahibby.com, LYDIAHIBY.com. Her client list is over 60,000 people in 20 years, and many began as skeptics. Well, Lydia likes skeptics, she says, and believes that when she proves herself, that her skeptic becomes her best publicity. Lydia has also co-authored a book recently, Conversations with Animals, dealing with her experiences And I am sure you have seen her or heard about her through her featured articles in Wall Street Journal, LA Times, Washington Post, 48 Hours, Late Night with David Letterman, Hard Copy, Inside Edition, The View, and, of course, The Tonight Show with Jay Leno. Welcome, Lydia, to Law of Attraction Talk Radio. I'm thrilled that you're here.
Thank you.
Lydia, the first part of the show, we had Buck Brannaman on talking about his documentary, and I know how much you respect him. But I wanted to go a little bit deeper into the metaphysical understanding of how these animals really try to communicate with us as much as we really want to understand what they're saying.
Okay.
And I know that you can help us understand more about this. Buck was severely abused as a child, so he could feel when the horse was being beaten to be submissive to the human master, and he developed this empathy. Is this the key for us to communicate with animals?
Yes, very much so. Very much so. Right. And I really respect that. And when I was a horse show groom years ago on the East Coast, I did have a lot of horses that had a lot of behavioral problems that most of the other people didn't want to deal with. Some of them were kind of threatening. And, you know, you deal with an animal that's 1,600 pounds, and a lot of them, I knew that they were scared, and I always put myself in their position. I always kept thinking, what if I was them and someone was doing it to me? And I never had problems with those horses. That's why I ended up getting them to work with, and people trusted me with them. And so I very much honor and respect that, you know, that was his position, and unfortunately he had to go through a terrible childhood trauma to kind of come to that place. But I always say to people, and it's true what we say about each other, put yourself in the other person's shoes. A lot of times it's hard to do that, but when you do it with an animal, especially a horse, who it's, we are their predators and they are prey. We're no different than a mountain lion jumping on top of them or dogs chasing them down. The fact that horses, after all these years of evolution, still want to be with people and trust us and be together, and we're trying to understand each other, to have that kind of empathy is huge, just huge, and it makes all the difference in people's relationships.
Buck also talked about how the animal is a direct reflection of its owners. Do you feel the same way, and could we talk about this a bit?
A lot of times, and then sometimes they have to deal with their own agenda, but yeah, I mean, just by virtue of the fact of when you're standing next to them, they can pick up on your energy. They read their owner's thoughts. I've had horses over the years say that they knew when an owner had had a miscarriage or when they were pregnant before they knew they were pregnant, just because your body is different and how you're balanced. And then when the person is riding them, when you're driving down a road or riding a horse, you have flashbacks of things that have happened to you. So if you had a horse that stopped at a jump or panicked or something like that, you broadcast that out, and then it's up to that animal in the moment to decide, oh, no, that's just an idle thought she's having, or, wow, she's really scared, I guess I better pick up on that. And so I really find that animals, dogs, cats, horses, come into our lives when we're ready to either learn something from them or we're supposed to help them with one of their issues. And so it becomes a continual growth process. And I've had several people. I had a gal yesterday who, you know, thought that she'd bought her horse forever, and she thought she was going to keep him forever. And she finally said, you know what, I think we both have kind of grown from the relationship, and I never thought I'd be saying this, but I think it's time for both of us to move on. And I validated that for her because they had both learned something. They had both grown like a relationship, and now she was ready to go to a more experienced horse, and he was ready to turn around and help another rider who was very tentative because of his experience. He could help her.
You know, they always say your enemies are your best teachers, but I'm beginning to think that animals are really the best teachers.
Yeah, a lot of times it is. And then there are some animals that just come into our lives because we're supposed to pamper them. I mean, you know, everybody's spirituality is different. And when I first started doing this work 27 years ago, I never really thought I'd have animals say to me things like, oh, tell her I've been with her before, you know, even in this lifetime. But many animals recycle. And so sometimes they come back to just be pampered and cared for. And then there are other ones that are the total caregivers. They're your teachers. They're the ones that meet you at the gate or meet you at the door and just say, oh, you had a bad day. I'm here to hang out with you. Let's do things together. And they are the total house manager or ranch manager in that area. And then they look at you and go, oh, look at the freeloader over there. He's done nothing all day. And the freeloader goes, hey, it's my free pass this time. You know, some animals just come back to school, not to learn anything, just to be pampered because they supported us another time. And so there's so much dynamics. I mean, that's the blessing of what I get to do is that it keeps growing and expanding and it never gets boring. And I learn something, multiple things every day from things that they show me and things that people have experienced. So it's pretty amazing.
Lydia, how did you get started in all this?
Well, let's see. When I was little, my mom took me on nature walks, and that's the photo, that's the cover of my book, Talking to a Goose. And then I went on to be a veterinarian technician. And being a former New Yorker, I wouldn't say, my mom really encouraged me to do it when I was little, and then I forgot about it, to be honest. And then I went to vet tech school, and I thought, well, I'll just work along veterinarians. I was very happy doing that, taking x-rays, and I was also working at a horse ranch out in New Jersey at one of the top hunter jumper barns, and we used to go to Washington and Devon, all the big-time horse shows. This was not a small place. And while I was working there, the owner of the ranch said, hey, guess what? We have this lady coming from California to talk to the animals. And I kind of rolled my eyes and went, oh, well, that's great. Because I totally had forgotten I was doing it. And yet, that was the place where I had 15 horses. Two of them would literally try to kill somebody if you go in their stall. That's how stall protective they were, because they had obviously had so many traumas. I was the only one who could work with them. So when I found out that Beatrice Lidecker, that's the lady who trained me, was coming, I didn't have time the 2 days that she was there to really spend time and watch her. I was so immersed doing my own thing. But at the end of the first day, she came up to me and she said, are you the one who's taking care of this horse? And I said, well, he's telling me that you're really thinking and taking good care of him. And I was kind of probably like deer in headlights going, oh, okay. And then the rest of the time, people kept coming up and going, wow, she knew about this. How did she get those details? We had a 40-stall barn. There was no way she could have cribbed, you know, or gotten notes ahead of time. There was just no way that could happen. And then I saw her do two horses towards the end of the second day, right in the moment, very at random, and like, boom, she was just rattling stuff off. And I knew those horses passed history. And then she looked at me and she said, and you still don't believe me. And I was kind of like, oh, okay. And before she left, because she was on a tour, she said to me, I really appreciate your relationship with him. You're very empathic. You have very good physical knowledge of the animals. You have spiritual knowledge of them. You have equestrian knowledge. She said, I'm looking for someone to train if you're ever interested. And she handed me a business card, and I was kind of dumbstruck. And then I moved here to California for a lot of reasons, and I was still working at vet hospitals. And little by little, I started following her and practicing, and then she gave the business to me. And so if anybody had told me 27 years ago I'd be doing this full-time, I would have been like, no way. I just had no idea. So it's been a pretty amazing journey.
So you had latent abilities to be an animal communicator. But what about the average Joe? Can we pick it up? Can we learn how to be an animal communicator?
We all have the ability to do that. The cover of my book is me talking to a goose when I was little, and all children are born with it. And so when I lecture, I always say to people, never discourage a child that comes up to you and says about any animal, you know, the dog said this or the horse said that, because kids are so open. They don't have any preconceived notions or things that they were taught in school or through spirituality that maybe they shouldn't be aware of an animal's intelligence and how they relate to us. So, and they talk in pictures, emotions, and physical sensations. So I usually describe it to everybody like the formulation is you step into them and become them. And when I communicate with them, that's how I do it too. So if you're a horse, you have the front legs, the back legs. If you're a dolphin, you have the flipper. And it's really about paying attention to your inner voice and what kind of content you get from that.
So how do we become one with the animal? How do we slip into and actually become it? Do we use our imagination?
I think you're getting there. I mean, I think as kids we always talk about that we're imagining things. I think that's kind of, it gives people the idea. But when you really just get quiet, the first thing that comes through is the most accurate. And so I've had people say, well, I just go and sit with my horse sometimes and I can feel them. Or even moreover, they'll get things from an animal when they're not even near them, like they're driving home in traffic or they're doing the dishes or when you first wake up or go to sleep. That's when your mind is most open. And then if something comes through from your animal, I really don't want people to discount that, because sometimes that's the only time they can press through all the chatter that we deal with every day. And then your mind goes, wow, isn't that interesting? It must have been coming from them and not from me, because I wasn't even focused on them.
Interesting.
And they transmit to each other and to us all the time. There are many times when I go to barn scenarios and I'll do one horse and the other horse says, well, you should talk to the other one. He's causing trouble, or the goat got into the grain, and they rat each other out all the time. And they also read our thoughts all the time. And so that's why it's even more than a body language thing. I mean, there was an interesting study years ago about a British scientist like had all these dogs set up with cameras, and they wanted to do a time-lapse thing about when the dog got excited about the owner coming home. And it wasn't when the owner was by the door. It was when the owner was thinking about going home and traveling home. Then the dogs got excited, and people were like, how did they know? Well, because you can transmit that energy over time and space, and there's no distance. And so whether you're in front of a horse right in front of you, or I do a lot of animals long distance over the phone and never meet them, and they live in Germany, Australia, and stuff, you can still communicate with them long distance. It's just all telepathic communication, and everybody has it.
You know, I believe this to be true. I have one cat named Tiger who has this thing about shrimp. He just loves it. That's his favorite food. He can tell when I am cooking it in the kitchen and he's outside. He's running in. He's begging for that shrimp. He wants a piece. So I know he must have read my mind. There's no way for him to know that I was cooking it inside.
Absolutely, all the time. When animals sit in front of you and stare at you, they're really reading all your thoughts. I call it the CNN scroll going by. And so sometimes when they're the most agitated and people are like, what? I don't know what they want. I fed them. I walked them. I cleaned the kitty litter box. I threw them hay, and they're still trying to get my attention. And the animal says to me, tell them that I want them to talk to me. Are they going on vacation? They're worried about something. So usually once you express it and just say, gee whiz, I was really worried about what my boss was going to think, or how are you feeling? And once you verbally say it, the animal goes, good, you got it. I just want you to talk to me.
You know, communicating with the animals has got to be so wonderful, so joyful. But there's got to be a lot of times that it's heartbreaking, too.
Yeah, well, it comes with the responsibility of, my first thing is I always say to everybody, I'm going to be honest about both of you from what you're both getting for each other, and also I want you to both be safe. Because the thing about horses are they are a romantic animal, and some people get in over their head and they get the wrong animal, just like they're dating the wrong person. And so, there's no point in everybody just beating their heads against the wall or someone getting hurt. And one of the big questions that people ask me all the time is, I love my horse, I want him to trust me. And my answer is, the animals usually trust people right away. What they don't trust is their response to a situation. And that's why I think people like Buck and some of the other natural horsemanship people, and I do natural horsemanship about how horses really do relate to a herd leader and that kind of thing. Those basics are so important, because there are situations where you can, God help us, bully an animal into something. But what most people want, and most horse people want, is that intimate moment where they're both as one, working together as a team, and to the end goal, and everyone's happy. That's the joy that most horse people want.
Wow.
And they can have that if they really can go deep. But it does bring up a lot of stuff. You know, how do you relate to that animal? How are you going to be forgiving and realize that maybe they have a lot of other things that have happened to them in their past? A lot of them are like post-traumatic stress people that come back from having to work in the war, and or if they've gone through a trauma. They come with a lot of baggage. And once people know what it is, it really helps them and enlightens them to kind of have a deeper relationship.
So what you're saying is animals, dogs, cats, horses, pigs can help with post-traumatic stress syndrome.
Yeah, yeah. There are a lot of programs now where there are a lot of dogs going into hospitals. There are a lot of therapeutic riding programs and stuff, or just programs where people have to see if they can just pick up a horse's foot. You know, people think, oh, that's really easy. Well, if your agenda is not correct, that horse is not picking his foot up. You know, and so there are a lot of great courses like that about cooperation, so that whether it's someone who's gone through a post-traumatic stress thing or just someone who wants to grow themselves, they can be mirrored back by a horse. So, yeah, that's very true.
So it's true. For those who have a lack of empathy or a lack of compassion, having animals in your life can actually teach you to develop those skills in order to get along better with people. So I notice you live in San Diego, just right down the street from me. And on your website, I notice that you actually help people find lost pets or communicate with those pets that have already passed.
I used to. Now I have a gal that actually does that. I got too emotionally deep entrenched in it at one point that I couldn't pull back and be objective. And when you deal with someone who's going through the stress of that, and I think the last statistics is from the Humane Society is almost every day 100,000 animals are lost. And now with all the disasters, I'm sure that has gotten bigger. And so to deal with everybody's grief and what to do, I have a gal that does that. I also have a gal, Teresa, that does animals that have crossed over. She really does contact them. She's very accurate. I know her personally. So I've gotten to a point now where I pretty much do the medical thing. I do a lot of pre-purchase exams. I kind of say to people, I'm like the Carfax for horses, where, you know, if you send me three ads or if you've ridden three different horses or you're interested in three horses, I can very quickly put them in order and get their background and make sure that you're the right fit before you ever go and see them so that you don't get attached to the wrong animal. I'm happy to do that. I do a lot of what I call medical evaluation. I'm not a vet, but I give people information to take back to their veterinarians or their chiropractors or their acupuncturists so that I'm giving them more and more piece of the puzzle. That's a lot of what I do.
Boy, I could have used you a couple of months ago and $2,000 ago, and now I know every time I have an animal that's sick, I'm going to pick up the phone and call you. Lydia, I want to ask your advice. I have a cat that was kind of left on my doorstep, and he is really a scaredy cat. He doesn't like to be around me. He likes to hide in dark places. He is more friendlier with the other cats, but as much as I try, I can't get him to feel comfortable around me. What should I do?
Okay, well, what's the cat's name?
Bogey.
Bogey. And just a quick description, is he long hair, short hair? What does he look like?
Long-haired tabby.
Brown tabby. Okay. All right. So the first thing when I asked him what's going on is he's really nearsighted, which a lot of animals are. So in order to get into anybody's personal space, he has to do just that. And then you're just big to him, no matter how tall or petite, however you are. The other thing he's showing me is he hasn't really been touched by humans when he was quite young. So cats, especially between 3 and 5 weeks of age, if they have had a bad experience with humans or they haven't had any experience with humans, they end up getting very, just as you described, very hypersensitive about coming around to people and things like that. So now that you know that he's nearsighted and hasn't had a lot of social interaction, and then he just said to me, I'm happy with how things are. And I had a cat that was very much like that when Beatrice first came to my house, and I had 5 kitties, and I didn't understand it either. And she said, you know, there are some people that are hermits that just don't go to the city. They don't go out. They're happy in their own environment. So I would just say to that, just take a deep breath, and when he does come out, just say, wow, I'm so glad that you're here, and I'm doing the best that I can. And if he wants more, he'll come out for more, but that may be his comfort zone. And at least you've allowed him to have that particular situation where you're not feeling overwhelmed, like, wow, I'm not doing enough, or he's not doing enough for me. You're giving him a space to live peacefully. Mm. So he said he does like to play with toys, but he makes his own toys, like paper clips and things like that. And,
yeah,
you know, he'll kind of make. So he keeps saying, I'm pretty content. I don't know why she's so worried.
I'm just used to having talkative and active cats.
So now you'll just appreciate him for the spirit that he is. And the cat that Beatrice met years ago, one day in the middle of like 5 people coming over for a dinner party, he just came out, laid in the middle of the rug, and that was it. He was social after that because it was his decision. And I kept asking him, and he's like, I just decided I want to be a part of the party. But so once I took the pressure off of him of worrying, and now that you know that your guy is okay, he's like, I'm good. So he might even be more relaxed and be more expressive with you now. But he's very happy.
Oh, that's good to know. I will stop worrying and I'll take the pressure off. As long as he's happy, I'm happy. And I'm more than willing to share my house with him. What about wild animals that come around? What should people do? And do they serve as teachers as well? I mean, are we supposed to be learning something from them?
Well, that's a good question. There's a really neat book called Animals Speak by Ted Andrews, and it's about how different animals, when they show up in your life, wild or, you know, animals that you adopt, about what that totem is. It's he's Native American, and we had an incident with a skunk that came around a couple of times, and I was fine that he came to visit until he managed to zap my girl, you know, my dog and stuff, and it wasn't a bad thing. So what I did was is I set up a perimeter, and now I have food outside the fence for him, and he seems to respect that. So a lot of times they come, they're drawn if you have very positive energy. So you might want to look up and like, why did a raccoon come up? Why did a skunk come up? But why do butterflies come up? When I lived up in the North County of L.A., we had a roadrunner that used to come through the property. He would stop right in front of me and look at me and then take off.
Wow.
And when I looked, it was about, you know, get ready for the next big movement in your life. So I embraced all that. So as far as feeding them, you know, you have to be very careful, because if it's an animal that you're drawing into an area where he's going to get in trouble. But I do have a couple of feral cats that I leave some food out for. At some point I will trap them and try to get them spayed so I don't have to worry about that. But I think everybody has to think about on their own personal level what's right for them.
Mm-hmm.
If you live where there are things like mountain lions and coyotes and stuff like that, yeah, unfortunately we're encroaching their area, and a lot of them are coming down looking for food and water, and even things like rattlesnakes and stuff. A lot of times where I lived up in the high desert, they would come close to the barn because they wanted water, and I would put a dish far enough out for them and keep it full. They never came close to the barn. They were just looking for something to drink. So I really try to respect nature, and I tell my clients to try to do that. And I had one gal that lives out in the wilds of San Diego, and she had a mountain lion coming through and stuff. And so she went to the corners of her property, and she said a prayer. And she could see that this thing was really hungry, so she went and got a couple of inexpensive steaks and, you know, really walked out and really left it far enough away from her property as an offering. And she said she hasn't seen it come back since.
Wow.
So, you know, I think that's something that everybody has to think on a personal level, what's going to work for them and what's safe for them.
Wow, that's a great idea. I like that. So let's talk about your book, Conversations with Animals.
Well, thankfully, I had someone to write it for me. I co-authored it. I'm not that talented, but thank you. it was Bonnie Weintraub, and it's called Conversations with Animals, and it's been out for quite a while. And there's also a how-to chapter in there, which is basically the condensed version of my class, which I teach both locally in California, and I travel and teach the one-day class, and that's the techniques on how to communicate. But there's stories on how I got started. There's a horse chapter and a cat chapter, and there's an exotic chapter. And so that's all in the book. And there's also a question and answer about, you know, people have called me and asked me about places like SeaWorld and, you know, things like that. And, you know, is it right to have animals that are captive? I mean, there's a lot of things, you know, once you start talking to animals, and a lot of my clients will ask me this too, should I, you know, breed my dog? And does my horse want to have a baby? I mean, there's the mentality of pet owners, which we love because they care about their animals, but the people I usually deal with are the pet lovers. And once you start asking the animals opinions about something and taking that to heart, there's a lot of responsibility that comes with that.
Well, since you brought it up, what is your opinion about captive animals?
Years ago, I didn't have a problem with it. I used to go occasionally when family members would come to visit. Now there's more and more an extreme uprising. I think kids are educated enough now. I think, like, the killer whale, like Keiko, that was an animal that was what we call an animal ambassador. Even after they released him and got him rehabilitated, he ended up really, they say, dying of a broken heart out in the middle of Iceland in the water because he wasn't part of his pod anymore and he wasn't with humans anymore. But he raised the consciousness of people thinking, like, maybe that's not the right thing to do. And there are some animals that do okay, like at the wild animal park. They really recreate as natural and close environment that they would find. Those animals, when I've gone there, are very happy and content. In fact, I know a couple of the trainers there. I shouldn't say trainers, keepers there. And those animals are very comfortable and happy. But when you deal with, you know, cetaceans, things like dolphins and pilot whales and killer whales that they can't echolocate out of a pool or a tank. As much as I want kids to be educated, I think they have been educated. Mm-hmm. I think there are other ways to educate them now so that we don't have to keep them in prison. You know, and it used to be when I would go like 10, 15 years ago and have to go with family members, they would, you know, swim behind me and go, okay, we get it. Now, they're kind of furious. They're like, enough is enough already. You know, people can go on boats and see whales out in the ocean. They can go on tours and watch the dolphins in front of the boat and enjoy them. So I think things are really rapidly starting to change. I think people are paying attention to that. Things like circuses and stuff like that, that, you know, now it's more about Cirque du Soleil with people, not so much with animals. Like, dogs love to perform. I mean, there are some animals that enjoy all that. But when you come to a wild animal that's not in a natural environment, that's very tough for them. So hard to watch.
I noticed that you're having a seminar in which to teach people how to communicate with animals. And I believe it's coming up in September.
Pasadena and Escondido. And I also travel out to other, like I went to Hawaii last year and taught a couple of classes. I went to Oklahoma and taught classes. So I have a lot of horse groups and dog clubs and stuff that want to sponsor me. And I also go and just do group appointments where on the weekends I'll do 25 animals in a day and people can audio tape or videotape their session. And then 2 days a week I do phone calls. And that's literally, I talked to several people from Sweden and Germany and Australia the other day, yesterday. And so people can call anywhere and I can help them with their animals. So, yeah.
You know, it's so comforting to know that now I can call someone who can help me figure out what is going on with my pet, rather than going to a vet and having them poke and prodded and feeling so uncomfortable, and being able to suggest to the vet what it could save thousands of dollars. So I think you're a true blessing. I've got your website memorized, LydiaHibby.com, LydiaHibby.com.
Really? Well, I always say to people, I'm not a vet, but I'm happy to help them. And I really, my best advice to people is that they get their animal checked out by a vet first. And if their vet doesn't really know what else to do, if they're kind of at a loss, and I have a lot of vets on my service because of that, they know that that's not what my job is. I really see my job as a detective and to give them another piece of the puzzle. And because I've had such medical background, if there are things that were suggested to an owner and they don't understand, like why do we do this test and how do we do this x-ray and what does, I can empower the owner, because the more an owner feels confident, like, oh, my vet wants to do this, this, and this, then when you drop your animal off, you can just say, you're going to be fine, and they're just going to check you out, and then you get to come home. If you can leave the animal with a feeling of security that they're in good hands, that's going to make the testing go better, it's going to make the results be better, and the animal's going to be a lot more relaxed in that situation. So that's all good for them to know, too.
Lydia, this has been so much fun, and I truly appreciate everything you do for the animals and your communication. And as a matter of fact, I'm thinking about taking one of your seminars, because as a person with 5 cats now, I need to understand what these teachers are trying to tell me. So many thanks, Lydia.
That's great. Take care.
And to all my wonderful, fabulous, incredible listeners out there, wherever you may be, I love you. Thank you so much. We'll talk to you next week. Bye-bye.
Thank you for choosing to be with us on Law of Attraction Talk Radio. Remember, let the ripple effect begin with you as we all connect together. If you have comments, please contact Jules at loaradionetwork.com. Have a happy week.